tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Leponier. In this hour, drama. Later on, a famous broadcast of the Columbia Workshop. But first, it's Suspense with Edward G. Robinson as star in A Case of Nerves from June 1st, 1950 on CBS.
Now, with A Case of Nerves and the performance of Edward G. Robinson, Suspense.
I got off the train in Toledo and walked through the station to the street. I passed up the waiting taxi and swung aboard a bus. Taxi drivers are likely to remember you, and I couldn't take a chance on that. I hadn't paid any attention to the bus. I didn't know what the line was or where it was going. It didn't make any difference. I didn't know Toledo very well anyway. I watched out the window, and when I came to a likely neighborhood, I got off. Strange, unfamiliar quarter of the city, and yet familiar because every city has neighborhoods like it. Drab, faceless houses looking almost alike. And then most of them, drab men and women, anxious to make a dollar by renting a room.
Now, this here is a nice room. It's the best one I got. Two windows on two sides. There's a nice soft bed.
Well, I'll take it.
How long you figure I'm staying?
Oh, just overnight. I'll pay you now.
Oh, well, that's $2, please.
Yeah. Oh.
What's the matter, mister? Are you sick?
Yes, I'm very sick. Is there a doctor near here?
Hey, you are sick.
Yeah, I think I'll go to bed. That doctor...
Oh, yeah, there's Dr. Martin just around the corner. He's young, but he's good.
Well, would you call him for me, please? Ask him to come right up. Oh.
Yeah, sure. Mm. Right away.
Come in.
I'm Dr. Martin. You're Mr.
My name is Wentworth, Doctor. James Wentworth.
Oh, yes.
I just got into town. I'm afraid I'm in for my old trouble again.
Oh, what's that, Mr. Wentworth?
Trigeminal neuralgia.
Ah.
I had bad attacks before.
Just where is the pain?
Here. And here.
Oh, yes. Now, if you'll...
No. Don't touch it. It's like a red-hot iron, even the draft of air.
I know. Really, you should have that nerve operated.
Yes, I'm going to have it down when I get home.
Oh, and where's that?
Cleveland.
Cleveland. I know a lot of men there. Who's your doctor?
Dr. Fletcher.
Lawrence Fletcher.
No, Andrew. Andrew R. Fletcher.
I don't recall him.
But he's waiting to clear up a heart condition before he operates.
Oh, yes, very sound. Now, how did this attack come on?
Oh, the way they always do. I was shaving and I touched the nerve with the razor.
Yes, the trigger point. It's very typical.
Now, that doesn't help me when that nerve starts jumping.
When will you be back in Cleveland?
About 3 days.
I'll give you a prescription. This is morphine, quarter grain. You've taken it before?
Yes, that's the only thing that gives me any relief.
I don't have to check. I'll drop this off at the drugstore and have them send it up.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Tell them that.
Not right now.
Huh? You know, Doctor, I think the pain isn't so bad now. I don't like to take more than I have to.
Oh, well, if you're sure you can get along.
Well, yes. I asked if you could drive a hurry. I'll hold the tablets until later. I paid Dr. Martin, young Dr. Martin of Toledo, and he left. I waited for the package to arrive from the drugstore. Then I stayed the night so the landlady wouldn't think it was peculiar. In the morning, I got on the train and went back to Cleveland to the hospital with the little white tablets in my pocket. The little white tablets with which I would kill Louise. It had been so simple to deceive the young, impressionable doctor. So simple to counterfeit the symptoms that I'd seen Louise react to for 4 years now. It would keep her in bed for 4 years more. Great. For 20. I'd live with the tic douloureux, a painful nerve so long. Too long indeed. Dr. Bantua had to come every day now, and this had to be on hand day and night to combat Louise's attacks, to quiet the raging nerve with morphine. Yes, but not for long. In my pocket were the little white tablets that would bring her peace. I went into the hospital kitchen.
Oh, hello, Mr.
Baker. Oh, hello, Nellie. I'd like to bring Mr. Baker a milk.
Of course. And just give it a touch of the fire to take the chill out.
I've missed you. Been away, I hear, Mr. Baker.
Yes, I had to go out of town.
And you ask me it's a good thing. For you, I mean. You needed a change. The hospital day after day was telling on you.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yes, it was. I could see. You're a good man, Mr. Baker. Believe me, it's like a saint you're bearing your trials. Not like some others I could mention.
Well, isn't the milk ready, Nellie?
It is, it is. There we are. Spoonful of sugar. Just the way Mrs. Baker likes it.
Well, thank you, Nellie.
And give Mrs. Baker my regards.
Yes, I'll do that, Nellie. Now, it was just a matter of stepping into an alcove on the way to Louise's room, dropping the white tablets into the warm milk. Sugar would mask the bitter taste. Oh, here. An ideal spot.
Mr. Baker.
Huh? Oh, nurse.
Did I startle you? I didn't mean to.
No, of course not.
Oh, bring in Mrs. Baker her milk, I say. Well, I'm going up there myself. May I keep you company?
Yes, of course, of course. Nurse White walked beside me to Louise's room. The chance for tonight was gone. Another night of pain for Louise. The sudden anger of the nurse. And a moment later, I realized how unreasonable it was. It was hard to be angry with anyone so pert, so alive, so beautiful. Even in her severe uniform, she managed to remain feminine, provocative. It was always a flower at her shoulder. Today, it was a sprig of flowering dogwood. And her quiet, unprofessional perfume was an exciting tingle in my nostrils. And then, we were in front of Louise's door.
Hello, Mrs. Baker. Look what I brought you. Albert, dear.
Hello, darling.
Oh, I'm so glad you're back, darling. I missed you.
I missed you, too. Here's your milk.
You'll never forget, do you, Albert?
How was your day?
Just fine. Wasn't it, Miss White?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Baker. A very good day, all things considered.
Well, I'm glad. I brought you something else, Louise.
Oh, the locket. Oh, thank you, Albert, for remembering. Look, nurse, isn't it beautiful?
Oh, it is. It's an old piece, isn't it?
It belonged to my mother.
I had to hunt all over the house for it. Whatever gave you the sudden notion you wanted it anyway?
I don't know. I've had a feeling I'll be joining Mother soon.
Oh, Louise. Please, don't talk that way.
Now, Mrs. Baker, you're going to be up on your feet before you know it. And that's almost enough talking tonight, Mr. Baker.
No.
Mrs. Baker, do you want me to leave a tablet for you?
Yes, thank you, dear.
Here you are. I hope you don't need to take it. Well, good night.
Good night, Miss White. You've been taking it every night?
Well, I try not to. But lately, the pain...
Yes, I know.
Oh, Albert, dear, you deserve something better than this.
Please, dear.
Now, your nose to the grindstone to pay for the doctors and nurses.
Oh, don't worry.
A little handball at the club and then this room.
Yes, but you're going to get better, dear. You must believe the doctor.
That's what Pauline says.
Pauline?
The nurse.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, is she looking out for you all right?
She's a dear. And very pretty, don't you think?
Pretty? Yes, I suppose so. I hadn't noticed.
I used to be pretty. You used to embarrass me sometimes, the way you looked at me.
But you're still beautiful, Louise. You'll always be.
I'm sorry, dear. I won't talk like that again. You'd better go now, Albert. I'll try to sleep.
Yes. Well, good night, dear. I'll see you tomorrow.
Mr. Baker.
Oh. Miss White. I thought you'd gone.
I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Baker.
Yes?
It's about Mrs. Baker. She worries me. Her mental state is very low. You heard how she talked about her mother, the locket.
Yes, I heard.
She needs something, I don't know what, to snap her out of this mood. I just thought I'd mention it to you.
Yes, thanks. Oh, where are you going?
To put the morphine away.
You know, I don't see why Dr. Van Tuer doesn't give her more of that stuff. She needs it. Yet you ration it out as though it were poison.
Well, it is poison, Mr. Baker. That's why I'm particularly careful about Mrs. Baker.
But you don't think she'd actually...
Oh, well, usually the ones who talk about it don't do it, Mr. Baker, so I wouldn't worry.
Hmm.
Good night.
Wait a minute.
Yes?
Miss White. Pauline, isn't it?
Wait. Yes, I didn't think you knew.
Well, would you mind, when we were alone, if I called you Pauline?
I'd like it.
Thanks, well... You know, this is an awful thing to ask, but... Well, you know, it's been pretty lonely for me.
Oh, yes, I know. That is, I can guess.
Well, would you... Would you let me take you to dinner this evening?
Why... Thank you, Mr. Baker. I'd love it. I'm off duty at 8.
Well, I'll pick you up then. And, Pauline...
Yes, Mr. Baker?
My name's Albert.
At 8, then. Albert.
My heart sang. She was perfect. Everything was perfect. I had my poison. I had my witnesses. Louise had said just the right things in their presence, talking about her locket, making her veiled hints at suicide. How beautifully everything fell into place. I started toward the lobby door when I heard my name.
Oh, Baker! I say, Baker.
Oh, Dr. Van Tour. How are you? Oh,
fine, fine. Say, I want you to meet someone. This is Dr. Martin of Toledo.
I looked at him, at the man who stepped forward to shake hands with me, and my mouth went dry. This was Dr. Martin of Toledo who had given me my murder prescription. Eager, bumptious young man who stood there now looking straight into my eyes and saying...
Hello. How's that bad nerve of yours?
I was caught flat-footed. I couldn't answer. Couldn't even turn and hide. Dr. Martin stared at me a minute, unbelievingly, and then his jaw hardened. After a long time, he put out his hand. Because there was nothing else to do, I took it.
Oh, this is Mr. Baker, Doctor. It's his wife who has this trigeminal condition.
His wife, eh?
Well, yes, of course. You didn't think I meant Mr. Baker, did you? He's as strong as an ox.
Yes, I can see that. No.
I ran into Dr. Martin in the doctor's lounge, Baker. He was telling me about a case he just saw in Toledo. Was Toledo, wasn't it, Martin? Symptoms were remarkably similar to Mrs. Baker's. Remarkably. I thought he might like to look in on Mrs. Baker. You don't mind?
She's sleeping, I think.
Oh, it's too bad. Well, another time, perhaps, eh, Doctor?
Oh, yes, certainly, Doctor.
Well, I've got to run. Glad I ran into you, Martin. Have lunch sometime, eh?
Yes, glad to.
I'll see you later, Baker.
Yeah, sure, Doctor, sure.
I'll have to be going myself now,
oh,
Mr. Baker.
Wait, Doctor. I want to talk to you.
Don't see that there's anything to talk about.
Yes, but there is. I want you to know that I, what happened in Toledo yesterday...
You don't have to explain. I understand.
You understand? She didn't say anything to Dr. Van Tour.
Well, why should I? It's none of my business.
None of your business?
Of course. I admit I didn't have you tagged as an addict.
Addict?
Yes. You don't look like one, and that trick of refusing an immediate shot, well, I've got to hand it to you. You fooled me completely. And using your wife's symptoms. Very clever. I don't doubt you can get a supply whenever you need it with that routine.
Oh, no, I assure you.
Oh, please, don't bother to lie to me. I guess I ought to thank you for teaching me that trick. It won't work again on this baby, believe me. And now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Baker, or Mr. Wentworth, I'm heading for a spot of handball.
Oh, wait.
Yes?
No hard feelings?
No, of course not.
Look, Doctor... If you really mean that about no hard feelings and if you haven't got a partner, well, I play a pretty good game.
Now, that's what I call a switch, anyway. All right, hop in.
An addict. He took me for an addict, working on any dodge I could to get a supply of dope. Yes, but later, when he heard of Louise's death, he'd remember... I had no idea what I was going to do. I only knew that I couldn't let him go. He drove me over to the athletic club. He wasn't a member, but he held a courtesy card from a Toledo club, and he signed me in as his guest, laughing as James Wentworth. He was a fast man on the court, younger, too. I'd have had a hard time keeping up with him in any circumstances, but as it was, he beat me easily. I could think of only one thing, that he was dangerous. Dangerous, and I had to get rid of him somehow.
A nice backhand you've got there, Baker. Wish I could handle those tough ones half as well.
Never mind the compliments, Doctor. Just remember the final score and be satisfied.
Say, how about a sweat out? They've got a good steam room here.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Here, this way, then. Oh, take your towel.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, this is hot. Ah.
Sit on your towel.
Yeah, good idea.
Oh, you know, it's lucky for me you came along. Place is dead today, not a soul here.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Oh,
hot, isn't it?
Yeah. Say, Baker, you know, I misjudged you. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Forget it.
You know, you really could do something for your troubles.
Yeah?
We've got a sanitarium in Toledo that has been having pretty good luck with addiction lately.
I scarcely heard him. I only realized that we were alone, clouded in steam, not even visible to any casually curious person looking through the glass square in the door. This was my chance. I'd never get another like it.
Take nerve, of course.
I picked up my towel.
Of you, that one. What are you doing, huh?
I'm sorry, Martin, but there's no other way. I whipped my towel over his head and got behind where his flailing arms couldn't reach me. I didn't want to leave any marks on him. With my free hand, I covered his mouth and pinched his nostrils shut through the towel. He fought hard. In a few minutes, he hung limp in my arms. And after a few minutes more, I knew he was dead. I left him there, hidden in the steam. In the locker room, I dressed quickly, parted my hair on the wrong side, and plastered it down in a way I'd never normally wear it. The man at the reception desk barely glanced at me as I passed him. Later, when they found Martin, they'd look for a man named Wentworth. They'd never find him because he didn't exist. It wasn't even that close. The papers reporting Martin's death put the cause down to heart failure brought on by the shock of exercise in the steam room. They didn't mention a companion. It wasn't important. But I waited anyway. A week. Waited and watched carefully. Because now not only Louisa's future was at stake, but my own and Pauline's.
There's the nurse's quarters, darling. Mm. You better not come any nearer.
Oh, Pauline, dearest.
I know, darling, I know. You must let go now. Oh, I'm late already.
No.
Albert.
No, yes, dear.
I'm leaving the hospital. I'm taking a job in Chicago.
You know what?
Yes. This is hopeless. I can't stand it. Taking care of your wife, smiling at her, seeing the two of you together.
But you can't do it. I couldn't live without you. Now that I found you.
What do you think this is going to do to me?
But I can't. When are you going?
I'm giving notice tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Oh, my darling. Goodbye.
Pauline. She was gone. She said goodbye. So I knew what you meant. When I saw her again, it would be in the hospital across Louise's bed. She'd be Miss White and I'd be Mr. Baker. No, I couldn't stand that now. Yes, but there was one sure way to hold her. The little white tablets were still in my pocket.
Albert, dear.
I brought you your milk.
Oh, thank you, dear. Hold this, will you, please?
What's that? Oh, your locket.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Who shall I leave it to, I wonder? Miss White. She's a sweet girl.
Oh, Louise, now, don't talk that way, Louise. You're not going to...
I'd like her to have it. I'll take the milk now, Albert.
She drank it. I had to clench my jaws to keep from crying out. She smiled and held out the empty glass to me. It was over. I went home and talked sleeplessly, waiting for the inevitable.
Hello? Yes? Yes? No, I'll be right over.
Dr. Vantour was outside Louise's room and a white-faced Pauline and Nellie from the kitchen as I hurried up the corridor.
Oh, Baker.
Oh, doctor. Doctor, can I go in?
No. Baker, your wife is dead.
What? Dead?
Oh, but I don't understand. I thought she was improving, that you planned to operate.
She died of an overdose of morphine.
Oh,
Mr. Baker, I'm terribly sorry. I am too, Mr. Baker.
Yes, but how could she get it?
That's what I intend to find out. She took it in this glass of milk. There are traces left. Nellie here says you brought it up to her.
I didn't want to, Mr.
No, that's all right, Nellie. Well, of course I took it up. I did every night. Everybody in the hospital knows that.
Yes, I knew it also. Was anybody in the room when you brought it?
No. Just Louise.
And you saw her drink the milk?
No, Doctor. She didn't drink it then, not until after I'd gone. She did that frequently.
Well, that's right, Doctor.
Yes, I know that, too. Only last night, before she drank it, she managed to dissolve in it a lethal dose of morphine. I've checked the hospital supply. Every tablet is accounted for. We keep a very strict count, you know.
Yes, I know that.
Have you anything to say, Baker?
Well, I hardly know. I'm stunned.
Doctor, what do you mean? Surely you're not accusing Mr. Baker.
I'm not accusing anyone. That will be up to the police.
Now, wait a minute, Doctor. You're making a mistake.
It seems perfectly clear.
Yes, but I didn't kill her.
Oh, no? Then how did she die?
Well, she took her own life. She'd hinted more than once. Miss White, you remember?
Yes, Doctor. I spoke to Mr. Baker about it myself. You know she was very depressed.
That's true, nurse, but the morphine, it must have come from the outside. We'd have missed it.
No, wait a minute. The tablet you left for her each night.
Yes, I ordered that.
But wait a minute. Instead of taking it, she saved it. Well, she must have. It's the only way it could have happened.
Well, that's it, Doctor. It must be. For the past week, she's been exhausted and drawn in the morning, yet the tablets were always gone.
Well, if that's the case, nurse, how does it happen that you failed to find them? Well, she couldn't leave her bed. You bathed her and changed the linen every day.
The locket.
The locket?
Yeah. Yes, of course. You remember, Miss White. She made such a point of asking me to bring it to her. And then the way she talked about joining her mother.
Yes, I do. I do remember.
She wanted you to have the locket, Pauline. It was her last wish. Now, where is it?
I have it here. Clutched in her hand. Let's... Police headquarters, please.
You have to notify them?
Yes, I do. Police headquarters? Give me homicide.
Please. Homicide?
Yes, I'll wait.
Are you out of your mind? I just got through explaining everything.
Yes, you explained everything, including what still puzzled me. You see, Baker, you were right about this locket. Your wife did have a reason for wanting it. Look, I'll open it. You see? It's full. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 quarter-grain morphine tablets that she saved at the cost of 7 nights of agony. And she would have taken them last night. Only you beat her to it.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of June, 1950 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now radio's great experiment, the anthology show The Columbia Workshop, brings us what would become its most famous broadcast, penned by renowned poet and writer Archibald MacLeish. This broadcast actually involves over 200 voices, something normally not done unless it was a studio audience with reactions. And adding to that stack of personnel was also the 4 directors it took to see this half hour of live radio through. The play is The Fall of the City.
The Columbia Workshop presents The Fall of the City by Archibald MacLeish. Ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast comes to you from the city. The world has watched with wonder for 3 days, not for the common occasions of brutal crime or the usual violence of one sort or another, or coronations of kings or popular festivals. No, but for stranger and disturbing reasons, the resurrection from death in the tomb of a dead woman. Each day for 3 days there has come to the door of her tomb at noon a woman buried. The terror that stands at the shoulder of our time touches the cheek with this. The flesh winces. There have been other omens in other cities, but never of this sort and never so credible. In a time like ours, seemings and portents signify. Ours is a generation when dogs howl and the skin crawls on the skull with its beast's foreboding. All men now alive with us have feared. We have smelled the wind in the street that changes weather. We have seen the familiar room grow unfamiliar, the order of numbers alter, the expectation cheat the expectant eye. The appearance defaults with us. Here in this city, the whirl of the time cracks. We take you now to the great square of this city. We are here on the central plaza. We are well off to the eastward edge. There's a kind of terrace over the crowd here.
It is precisely 4 minutes to 12. The crowd is enormous. There might be 10,000. There might be more. The whole square is faces. Opposite over the roofs of the mountains. It is quite clear. There are birds circling. We think they are kites by the look. They're very high. The tomb is off to the right somewhere. We can't see for the great crowd. Close to us here are the cabinet ministers. They stand on a raised platform with awnings. The farmers' wives are squatting on the stones. Their children have fallen asleep on their shoulders. The heat is harsh. The light dazzles like metal. It dazes the air as the clang of a gong does. It is 1 minute to 12 now. There is still no sign. They are still waiting. No one doubts that she will come. No one doubts that she will speak, too. 3 times she has not spoken. Now it is 12. Now they are rising. Now the whole plaza is rising. Fathers are lifting their small children. The plumed fans on the platform are motionless. There's no sound but the shuffle of shoe leather. Now even the shoes are still. We can hear the hawks. It is as quiet as that now. It is strange to see such throngs so silent. Nothing yet. Nothing has happened. Wait. There's a stir here to the right of us. They're turning their heads. The crowd turns. The cabinet ministers lean from their balcony. There's no sound, only the turning.
First the waters rose with no wind.
Listen. That is she. She's speaking.
Then the stones of the temple kindled without flame or tinder of maize leaves.
They see her beyond us. The crowd sees her.
Then there were cries in the night haze. Words in a once-heard tongue. The air rustling above us as at dawn with herons. Now it is I who must bring fear. I who am 4 days dead. The tears still unshed for me, all of them. I for whom a child still calls at nightfall. Death is young in me to fear. My dress is kept. Still in the press in my bedchamber, no one has broken the dish of the dead woman. Nevertheless, I must speak painfully. I am to stand here in the sun and speak. The city of masterless men will take a master. There will be shouting men, blood after. Do not ask what it means. I do not know. Only sorrow and no hope for it.
She is gone. No, they are still looking.
It is hard to return from the time past. I have come in the dream. We must learn to dream where the crumbling of time like the ash from a burnt string has stopped for me. For you the thread still burns. You take the feathery ash upon your fingers. You bring yourselves from the time past as it pleases you. It is hard to return to the old nearness. Harder to go again.
She is gone. We know because the crowd is closing. All we can see is the crowd closing. We hear the releasing of held breath, the weight shifting. The lifting of shoe leather. The stillness is broken as surface of water is broken. The sound circling from in outward. Small wonder they feel fear. Before the murders of the famous kings, before imperial cities burned and fell, the dead were said to show themselves and speak. When dead men came, disaster came. Presentiments that let the living on their beds sleep on woke dead men out of death and gave them voices.
Masterless men, when shall it be?
Masterless men will take a master.
What has she said to us?
When shall it be? Masterless men will take a master. Blood after.
What has she said to us?
Blood after!
They are milling around us like cattle that smell death. The whole square is whirling and turning and shouting. One of the ministers raises his arms on the platform. No one is listening. Now they are sounding drums, trying to quiet them, likely. No, no, something is happening. There in the far corner. A runner, a messenger, staggering. People are seeing him. People are calling. He comes through the crowd. They are quieter. Only those on the far edge are still shouting. Listen. He's here by the ministers now. He is speaking.
There has come the conqueror. I am to tell you. I've raced over sea land. I've run over cane land. I've climbed over corn land. It was laid on my shoulders, by shall and by shan, that standing by day and staying by night were not for my lot till I came to the sight of you. Now I have come. Be warned of this conqueror. This one is dangerous. Word has outawed him. East over sea cross has all taken every country. No men are free there. Ears overhear them. Their words are their murderers. Judged before judgment, tried after trial, they die as do animals. Offer their throats as the goat to a slaughterer. Terror has taught them this. Now he is here. I tell you, beware of him. All doors are dangerous. The warders of wealth will admit him by stealth. The lovers of men will invite him as friend. The drinkers of blood will drum in him suddenly. Hope will unlatch to him. Hopelessness open. I say and say truly to all men in honesty, such is this conqueror. Shame is his people. Liquors of spittle. Their lives are unspeakable. They're dying indecent. Wait, I have said to you.
They are leading him out. His legs give. Now he is gone in the crowd. They are silent. No one has spoken since his speaking. They stand so, circling the governors. No one has spoken or called out. There is no stir at all, nor movement. Even the farthest have stood patiently. They wait, trusting the old men. They wait faithfully, trusting the answer. Now the huddle on the platform opens. A minister turns to them, raising his two arms.
Freemen of this nation! The persuasion of your wills against your wisdom is not dreamed of. We offer theme for your consideration. What is the surest defender of liberty? Is it not liberty? A free people resists by freedom, not locks, not blockhouses. The future is a mirror. For the past marches to meet itself. Go armed towards arms, peaceful towards peace. Free and with music towards freedom. But face tomorrow with knives, and tomorrow's a knife blade. Murder your foe, and your foe will be murder. Even your friends suspected of false speaking. Hands on the door at night and the floorboards squeaking. Those who win by the spear are the spear-toters. And what do they win? Spears. What else is there? If their hands let go, they have nothing to hold by. They are no more free than a paralytic propped against a tree. With the armored man, the arm is upheld by the weapon. The man is warned by the knife.
I wish you could all see this as we do. The whole plaza full of these people, their colorful garments, the harsh sunlight, the water sellers swinging enormous gourds, the orator there on the stone platform, the temple behind him, the high pyramid, the hawks overhead in the sky, teetering slow to the windward, swift to the downwind, the houses blind with the blank sun on them.
Once depend on iron for your freedom, and your freedom's iron. Once overcome your resistors with force, and your force will resist you. You will never be free of force. Never of arms unarmed will the father return home, the lover to her loved, the mature man to his fruit orchard, walking at peace in that beauty, the years of his trees to assure him. Force is a greater enemy than this conqueror. It's a treacherous weapon. But nevertheless, my friends, there is a weapon. Weakness conquers. Against chainlessness, who breaks? Against walllessness, who vaults? Against forcelessness, who forces? Against the feather of the thistle is blunted sharpest metal. No edge cut seed fluff. And this conqueror, unresisted, will conquer no longer. A posturer, beating his blows upon verdicts, shifting his guard against shadows, snickers will sound among road menders, titters be stifled by laundresses, coarse guffaws among chambermaids, and reddened with rage, he will roar. He will sweat in his uniform foolishly. He will disappear. No one hear of him. For there is a weapon, my friend. Reason and truth are that weapon. Let this conqueror come. Show him no hindrance. Suffer his flag and his drum. Words win.
There's the scout now. He's done. He's climbing down. A great beach. They're all smiling and pressing around him. The women are squatting in full sunlight. They're opening packages. Bread, we'd say from the look. Yes, bread. Bread wrapped between corn leaves. They're squatting to eat. They're quite contented and happy. Women are calling their men from the sunny stones. There are flutes sounding away off. We can't see for the shifting and moving. Yes, there are flutes in the cool shadow. Children are dancing in intricate figures. Even a few old men are dancing. You'd say they'd never feared to see them dancing.
That's odd. The music has stopped. There's something. It's a man there on the far side. He's pointing. He seems to be pointing back through the farthest street. The people are twisting and rising, bread in their fists. We can't see what it is. Wait. It's a messenger. It must be a messenger. Yes, it's a message. Another. Here he is at the turn of the street, trotting, his neck back at the nape. He looks tired. He winds through the crowd with his mouth open, laboring. The people are offering water. He pushes away from them. Now he has come to the stone steps, to the ministers. Stand by. We're in. Listen. Leaning on the stone. He's speaking.
Let us come to conquer. I am to tell you. I have run over Kwanland. I have climbed over Kronland. I have crossed over mountains. It was laid on my shoulders by Shell and by Shant. That standing by day and staying by night were not for my lot till I came to the sight of you. Now I have come. I bear word. Beware of this conqueror. The fame of his story, like flame in the winter grass, widens before him. Beached on our shore with the dawn over shoulder, the lawns were still cold when he came to the sheep meadows. Sun could not keep with him, so was he forward. Fame is his sword. No man opposing him still grows his glory. He needs neither foeman nor thick set of blows to gather his victories, nor a foe's match to earn him his battles. He brings his own enemy. He baggages with him his closet antagonist, his private opposer. He's setting him up at every road corner, a figure of horror, with blood for his color, fist for his hand, reek where he stands, hate for his heat, sneers for his mouth, clout for his clothes, oaths if he speak. And he's knocking him down in every town square till hair's on his blade and blood's all about like dust in a drought. And the people are shouting, flowers him flinging, music him singing, and bringing him gold and holding his heels and feeling his thighs till their eyes start and their hearts swell. And they're telling his praises like lays of the heroes and chiefs of antiquity. Such are his victories. So does he come. So he approaches. No man to conquer, yet as a conqueror marches he forward. Stands on your mountains, soon to descend on you.
That touched them. That frightened them. Some of them point to the East Hills. Some of them mock at the ministers. Freedom? Freedom for what? To die in a rat trap? They're frantic with anger and plain fear. They're sold out, they say. You can hear them. Down with the government. Down with the orators. Down with the liberal learned minds. Down with the mouths and the loose tongues in them. Down with the lazy lot. They've sold us. We're sold out. Talking is done for us. They're boiling around us like mullets that smell sharp. We can't move for the mouth. They're crazy with terror.
Disasters! Men, remember!
There's a voice over the crowd somewhere. They hear it. They're quieting down. It's the priest. We see them now. It's the priest on the pyramid. There might be 10 of them, black with their hair tangled. The smoke of their fires flat in the quick wind. They stand in the thick of the smoke by the stone of the victims. Their knives catch in the steep sun.
Send your God, remember.
They're shouting. Listen.
Let the world be saved by surrendering the world. Not otherwise shall it be saved.
And to your God, remember.
Let evil be overcome by the coming over of evil. Your heart shall be elsewhere.
And to your God, remember.
And to your God, the conqueror cannot take you.
And to your God.
The narrow dark will keep you.
And to your God.
In God's house is no breaking.
And to your God.
In God's silences, sleep is.
Lay up your will with God.
Stone cannot steal you.
Lay up your mind with God.
Blade cannot blind you.
Lay up your heart with God.
Danger departs from you.
It's a wonderful thing to see this crowd responding. Even the simplest citizens feel the emotion. There's hardly a sound now in the square. It's wonderful, really impressive. The priest there on the pyramid, the smoke blowing, the bright sun, the faces.
In the day of confusion of reason, when all is delusion, in the day of tyrants of tongues, when the truth is for hire, in the day of deceit, when ends meet. In the day of divisions of nation, when hope is derision, in the day of the supping of hate, when the soul is corrupted, in the day of despair, when the heart's bare.
A kind of dance is beginning. A serpent of people, a current of people, coiling and curling through people. A circling of people through people, like water through water.
Out of the stir of the sun, out of the shout of the thunder, out of the hush of the stars, withdraw the heart.
A very young girl is leading them. They've torn the shawl from her bare breast. They are giving her flowers. Her mouth laughs. Her eyes are not laughing.
We love and love the air, to the sword and the sword wearer. We to the mark and the mark, withdraw the heart.
She's coming. The drum is pounding. The crowd shrieks. She's reaching the temple. She's climbing it. Others are following. 5, 10, hundreds are following. Crowding the stairway. She's almost there. The flowers are falling. She looks back. The priests are surrounding her. Wait. Wait, something has happened. One of the ministers, one of the oldest, the general, the one in the feathered coat, he's driving them down with a staff of a banner. He's climbed after them, driving them down. They're shouting and yelling enough that they're going.
Men.
He's telling them off, too.
Oh, men.
You can hear
listen.
Him.
Men. All men, listen. Twist your neck on your neck bone. The knife will wait in the pit for you. There is a time for everything. Time to be thinking of heaven. Time of your own skin. Cast your eyes to the windward. Do you see smoke on those mountains? The smoke is the smoke of towns. And who makes it? The conqueror. And where will he march now? Onward! The heel of the future descends on you.
He has them now. Even the priests have seen it. They're all looking away here to the east. There's smoke, too, filling the valleys like thunderheads.
You are foolish, old men. You ought to be flogged for your foolishness.
your grandfathers died to be free. And you juggle with freedom. Do you think you're free by a law like the falling of apples in autumn? You thought you were safe in your liberties. You thought you could always quibble. You can't. You take my word for it. Freedom's the rarest bird. You risk your neck to snare it. It's gone while your eyeballs stare. Those who'd lodge with a tyrant, thinking to feed at his fire and leave him again when they're fed, are plain fools. Were bred to it. Brood of the servile races, born with a hangdog face.
They're all pointing and pushing together. The women are shouldering baskets, bread, children. They smell smoke in the air. They smell terror.
Children and doing the strong man's will. The free will fight for their freedom. They're free men first. They feed, meager or fat, but as free men. Everything else comes after. Pool, roof, raft, even the sky and the life of it.
The sun is yellow with smoke. The town's burning. The war's at the broken bridge.
Are you free? Will you fight? There are still inches for fighting. There is still a niche in the street. You can stand on the stairs and meet him. You can hold in the dark of a hall. You can die. Or your children can crawl for it.
They won't listen. They're shouting and screaming and running. The square is full of deserters with more coming. Every street from the bridge is full of deserters. They're rolling in with the smoke blowing behind them. The plaza's choked with the smoke and the struggling of stragglers. They're climbing the platforms, driving the minister, shouting. One speaks and another.
The city is doomed. There's no holding it. Let the conqueror have it. It's his.
The age is his. It's his century.
He's one man. We are but thousands.
Who can defend us from one man?
Bury your arms. Break your standard.
Give him the town while the town stands.
They're throwing their arms away. Their bows are in bonfires. The plaza is littered with torn plumes. Spear handles.
Masterless men must take a master.
Order must master us.
Freedom for fools. Lost is the peasantry. Freedom has eaten our strength and corrupted our virtue.
Men must be ruled.
Fools must be mastered.
Rigor and fast will restore us our dignity.
Chains will be liberty.
The last defenders are coming. They whirl from the streets like wild leaves on a wind. The square scatters them. Now they are fewer. 10 together are 5. They come with their heads turned, their eyes back. Now there are none. The street's empty, in shadow. The crowd is retreating, watching the empty street. The shouts die. The voices are silent. They're watching. They stand in the slant of the sunlight, silent and watching. The silence after the drums echoes the drumbeat. Now there's a sound. They see him. They must see him. They're shading their eyes from the sun. There's a rustle of whispering. We can't see for the glare of it. Yes? Yes? He's there in the end of the street, in the shadow. We see him. He looks huge, a head taller than anyone, broad as a brass door. A hard hero, heavy of heel on the brick, clanking with metal, the helm closed on his head, the eye holes hollow. He's coming. He's clear of the shadow. The sun takes him. They cover their faces with fingers. They cower before him. They fall. They sprawl on the stone. He's alone where he's walking. He marches with rattle of metal. He tramples his shadow. He mounts by the pyramid, stamps on the stairway, turns. His arm rises. His visor is opening. There's no one. There's no one at all. No one. The helmet is hollow. The metal is empty. The armor is empty. I tell you, there's no one at all there. There's only the metal, the barrel of metal, the bundle of armor. It's empty. They don't see. They lie on the pavement. They lie in the burnt spears, the ashes of arrows. They lie there. They don't see or they won't see. They are silent.
The people invent their oppressors. They wish to believe in them. They wish to be free of their freedom, released from their liberty. The long labor of liberty ended. They lie there. Look, it's his arm. It is rising. His arm's rising. They're watching his arm as it rises. They stir. They cry. They cry out. They are shouting. They are shouting with happiness. Listen. They're shouting like troops in a victory. Listen. The city of masterless men has found a master. You say it was they were the conquerors. They that had conquered. City is fallen.
Columbia Workshop has taken great pride in presenting the premier performance of The Fall of the City, a verse drama written especially for radio by Archibald MacLeish, Pulitzer Prize winner, and one of America's outstanding poets. The production was produced and directed by Irving Reese.
The Columbia Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from the 11th of April, 1937 on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. It's been a pleasure.